did gives a bit of an introduction to the parsha, Parshas Eiket, to understand what's going on throughout this entire parsha. Many of the laws that were given up until now, many of the speeches that were given up until now with Moshe Rabbeinu, only dealt with the generation living at that time. They had messed up with the Maraglim. They were the ones who messed up with everything that we're talking about. And most of the things in Parshas Vatanan were things specifically for them and not for anybody else. That's the concept of what was there. This parsha, Parshas Eiket, is supposed to be a brand new parsha that teaches us how to deal with life when we're not in Eretz Yisrael, when we're in Galus, and it's hard to be able to do everything that we're supposed to do. That's why it was made into its own Sedra, even though it's just a continuation of Vatanan. It really is just continuing the whole conversation that Moshe had with Bnei Yisrael. It just goes straight on. The connection, it's V'haya Ekev Tishmaun. It's just when you listen to everything that I just told you about, then you're going to get the following. That's going to be your... It's strange. So here's what you're supposed to do. When we don't have korbanos, instead, the way to get a Kaddish Baruch Hu to listen to us is through learning Torah. It has to be through us learning Torah. Davening obviously takes the place of korbanos. And instead of us doing a service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu by bringing a korban, there's a service of a Kaddish Baruch Hu that we have through davening. That's for sure. There's no question about that. But the real way for a Kaddish Baruch Hu to listen to us and to want what we're doing and to really go through everything is only through us learning. That's the line of Ekev Tishma'un. That the line is, when you listen as the Mishpatim Eila to these Mishpatim Ushmartim Asisim, you keep them and you do them, then a Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to keep everything for you. Now Tishma'un, says the Nitziv, has a nun at the end of the word. Anytime there's a nun at the end of the word, it's mamayit. It minimizes the effect that the word is supposed to be. Tishmu would be all of you should hear it. All of you will do it. The nun at the end says, no, not all of you. There's going to be an exclusion here. The reason why is because it's impossible for all of Klal Yisrael to be able to sit and learn all day long. That can't happen. No people will be able to work that way. It's impossible for everybody to do that. Some people will be able to sit and learn all day. Other people are not going to be able to do that. And that not only applies for us nowadays, that also applies for the people at the time. People had to wage war. For 14 years, Bnei Yisrael were going to go into Eretz Canaan. 7 years of it, they were going to fight the battle. 7 years, they're going to divide up the land, figure out what the land was. They're going to be their own surveyors trying to figure everything out. It's supposed to be 14 years of Bnei Yisrael being able to work together to be able to make sure that it happens. Some of them are going to learn. Some of them are going to go out to war, and they're both equal. That's the line of Tishma Un. Some of you will have to listen. And in that case, because some of you are learning and some of you are doing what a Kaddish Baruch Hu really wants us all to do, if you do it that way and you do it correctly, then everything's going to be well for all of Klal Yisrael. There's going to be good things for everybody and people are going to, whatever. But some people have to dedicate their lives to it. That's the concept behind it. Now that's how our parsha starts off. It's a great start to be able to understand what our job is in this world. The Chassam Sofer brings up regarding us going into Matan Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu tells the people about what they did wrong by the Egel Azov. And Parak tests, you're crossing over the Yarden, you got HaKadosh Baruch Hu angry, and then HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you the Shnei Luchos Avonim, the two Luchos, with everything on it. At the end of the 40 years, 40 days and 40 nights that I was up there on top of the mountain, so he gave you the Shnei Luchos Avonim, Luchos Abris. And Pasuk Yud Zayin, it says, V'etbos b'Shnei Luchos, I grabbed on to the two Luchos Abris, V'ashlichem el Shtei Yadayin, I threw them out of my two hands, and I broke them in front of your eyes. Okay, this is the start of what caused it, everything with the Egel Azov. We don't go into the history of Aaron HaKohen being convinced by the people to throw the gold inside the big pile, and eventually the golden calf came out. All it says is, simply put, I came down and I saw that everything was going crazy by you, and I took the two luchos and I threw them down in front of your eyes and I broke them. That's not how the Hashem Kareishon. I davened in front of a Kaddish Baruch Hu Arvin Yom Rabbein Lailah 40 days, 40 nights. Lachem Lo Chalti Ma'ayim Lo Shesisi. I didn't eat any bread. I didn't drink any water. Because of your evil things, that everything that had gone wrong. Okay. Moshe Rabbeinu threw those luchos down out of anger. Anybody know what the Gemara says about somebody who breaks things out of anger? What is it called if a person breaks things out of anger? When he's so angry, he takes like a phone, throws it down to the ground, and he smashes it into pieces. What does the Gemara say about such a person? Good, bad, what? No, that's a little too extreme. That's very, very extreme. Right? But what is it? Avodah Zarah. It's as if he worshipped a Avodah Zarah. A little too extreme to say that he has no chelik in Olam Haba because he got angry wine. That's a bit much, just a little bit.
What?
The concept is that you lost your mind. You were so into what you were doing. You got so angry, you don't even want to think anymore. You just take the thing in your hands, you just threw it down to the ground. That's supposed to be like a Avodah Zarah. It's killing you don't care about anybody else. You're not listening to anything else. Why is this okay? HaKadosh Baruch Hu sat there and he looked at the luchos and he said, you know what? Looked at the luchos and said, you know what? I don't want to think about it anymore. He just takes the luchos, smashes them in front of everybody. As if that's a praise to Moshe Rabbeinu. You can't do that. Getting so angry is not a good thing. Why was he allowed to do that? The Gemara says, you're allowed to break kelim in front of your family in order to get them all into it because they're scared. Now they think like, oh, no, daddy's watching out for us. You're allowed to do that in front of your family. But you're not allowed to do regular stuff. You have to take already broken kelim. You have to have kelim that are already broken that are there for when daddy has to get angry. Now, I know you think to yourself, well, there's never a time for daddy to get angry ever. And that might be true. But let's say your kid's running into the street. Running the street to go get a ball. If you go up to him and say, honey, don't go into the street. It's not good to walk in the street. You might be killed. They're not going to listen. They don't listen to stuff like that. There are times where it's good to get angry. You take one good look at them and you say, you better not go in the street again or else. And then the kid learns his lesson. He realizes he's not going in the street ever again. No abuse. You don't smack him around, throw him down to the ground. That's not a good idea. You look at him and you scream. You make one big yell and you say, you better not do that. And that anger helps. That's the way you're supposed to be in your house, says Chazal. But don't break something out of anger. Break something that's already broken. When Moshe Rabbeinu was holding on to the luchos, what did he see happen to the luchos? As he was holding on to them, as he saw the Egel Azov, the letters flew up to Shemayim, which means the luchos were already broken. And you're allowed to take already broken luchos and throw them down in order to show your anger in front of your kids, in front of the people that you're in charge of, to show them they did the wrong thing. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu did. Moshe specifically did something. Vashabrem le'einechem. I broke them in front of your eyes. In front of my eyes, they were already broken. And that's why I was allowed to do it. But in front of your eyes, you think I really broke them? No, absolutely not. They were already broken before I threw them down. That's the concept. Now, look at Parak Yud Pasuk Aleph. Ba'isahi, Amar Shemelai, P'sol l'chol shnei luchos avanim k'rishonim. Now I want you to make two brand new luchos. Va'alei elai aharen, come up to me to the mountain, basizolcha aroneis. You should make for yourself an aron of wood and put it down inside. The Kiddush Levi asks, why is Moshe Rabbeinu telling them this? We're trying to do mussar over here. We're trying to yell at the Nesol and tell them what they did wrong during this entire time, how they had done something wrong and how they have to fix themselves. What does the Aron of Eight have anything to do with mussar? What's this telling them? Are they learning something new? Did they not know that a new Aron was made after he came down with the second luchos? What was being told over here that all of a sudden they had no idea and now they heard something like, oh, you're right. We should work on ourselves. What was it that Moshe Rabbeinu was telling them about this Aron? Okay, it's not just information. It is a reason for them. There is a reason for them to know this. If not for the sin of the Egel Azov, the luchos would never have been hidden in an Aron Kodesh. That's the idea of what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to show them. If you wouldn't have sinned, those luchos, the first luchos, would have either, there's two different opinions, Moshe Rabbeinu would always have been holding them, and he never would have let them go. The rest of his life, he would have had the luchos in his hands. And if you ask me, then when was he going to go to sleep? Not a problem. He just went 40 days and 40 nights without eating, drinking, and sleeping. Moshe Rabbeinu did not have an issue with holding luchos for the rest of his life. Okay? Or, if that wouldn't have happened, or they would have stayed up in the air. And whenever Bnei Yisrael would have looked at the Mishkan, they would have seen a Mizbeach. There would have been the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and on top of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, instead of the Aron being inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there would have been the Luchos hanging in the air right above the Mishkan. It would have passed over to the Beis HaMikdash, and that would have been freaky for anyone to see. If anybody's thinking about doing something wrong, you just take one look at the Kodesh HaKadoshim, you see the Aron Kodesh, you see the Luchos standing up there on top, hanging in the air. I mean, that would stop anybody from doing anything wrong. You'd think to yourself immediately you wouldn't do it. That's what you lost, said Moshe Rabbeinu to the Klal Yisrael. I had to make for you an Aron Eight because you wanted the second luchos, because you lost the first one. That's the punishment. That's the punishment you're supposed to have. That's the concept of what they lost. And that's the idea of something called Levush. Bnei Yisrael before the Chet, Adam Rishon before the Chet, he didn't have any clothes. After the Chet, he had to put on clothing. It's the same thing with the luchos. When Bnei Yisrael, before they had done the Egel Azov, they were like Adam Arishon before the Chet. They didn't need to get dressed. There was no real Yetzirah within them, which meant that the Luchos Ha'edus, those Luchos, wouldn't have needed a Levush. They wouldn't have needed clothing. They could be up there in the air and they could have seen them as they were. Now, nobody ever saw the Luchos. The Luchos were never taken out of the Aron. From the time that Moshe Rabbeinu put them in until the time that the Aron Kodesh was Ganus by Yoshia Melech, there was not a single time when anybody saw the Luchos. Luchos were not able to be seen. It was Ki'ilu watching a person that was naked. That's the concept behind it. After that, there was a Levush, and that's the Musar that Bnei Yisrael got, and they understood it. Now, the Netziv asked this question as well. What happened that there was such... Why all of a sudden do we mention the Luchos? But aside from that, it's strange. It says, Asisa Aronetz. First, he told them to make the Luchos, and then make an Aronetz. Moshe Rabbeinu says later on, I made an aron made of wood, and then I made the luchos. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu switch that around? It should have been the way HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, which is the luchos, and then the aronates. And the Medrash even goes on about Moshe Rabbeinu and says, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu did the greatest thing in the world, that he made the aron before he made the luchos. What's the big deal about making an aron before you make the luchos? What difference does it make? I mean, if the whole thing is just supposed to be that it's supposed to be a levush, what difference does it make? And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do it one way, why in the world would Moshe do it another way? What's the concept behind such a thing? Why would he do such a thing? Says in it says, it's a little bit different than the idea that we had before, and this is more like a remnant. This was a command. This is a command for Moshe Rabbeinu, not to just create an aron, but that it couldn't be made of gold or silver. It had to be made of wood. What's the difference between gold, silver, and wood? There's a big difference.
Wood rots.
Wood rots. Not bad.
Cold.
Give me another one. Lots of things is a good answer, by the way. That's up there. My top three answers. But wood rots.
Gold tarnish.
Gold tarnish. So you're saying that if it goes bad, this stuff is obviously going to be taken care of. So forget about the rotting aspect. What's the difference between wood and gold? Value without a question. Which, in fact, I would say that because of that, I would use gold and silver for Yaron Kodesh instead of Atzei. I wouldn't use wood because Atzei is just not good enough for me. So what's better about wood than it is about gold? Think of where it comes from.
It's
definitely lighter, but that doesn't matter because it carries itself. Wood grows. Stones don't grow. Stones do not grow, at least in the way that we look at it. Stones form themselves from the ground, and they are what they are. They don't change. There's nothing that helps them grow in a physical manner, in which the wood has life, not real life as in a nefesh, a ruach, a neshama, but it has something to it. It grows. It becomes something. While silver and gold is not that. Here's the concept. The very first luchos were luchos that had an ability to give you Torah that you would never forget. You were on a certain level. There were other reasons before the chayit, right? If that's what they were like, there was no room for growth. You can't grow greater than other reasons before the chayit in our world. It's impossible. Other reasons before the chayit is the greatest level that we can be in this world. And if that's so, gold and silver perfectly represents what that would have been like. The first luchos would have been like gold and silver. You don't grow. You start off on a very, very high level and then you don't go anywhere. You just stop where you are and that's it. The second luchos was about growth. You're going to have to learn it. You're going to have to go through it. You're going to have to study it again and again and again. I just learned another halacha. There's so many halachos that we just have no clue about. I just went aside from all that. I learned a halacha today that makes you forget your learning. That's not like, it has to do with tzniyas. I was learning with the chassan and I totally forgot this halacha. And it says straight out in halacha, in the Shulchan Aruch, that if you don't do this regarding hilchos tzniyas, you forget your learning. You forget your learning. It's such a crazy thing if you're not a Baal Torah. I mean, if you don't learn Torah, then you go crazy. That's what the Shulchan Aruch says about such a thing. There's so many things like that. And I just went today to Rabbi Schwartz about something that I had to do. I had kashas on it. Rabbi Cohn is out of town. Rabbi First is out of town. So Rabbi Schwartz, pretty good third call, you know. It's not bad to go to Rabbi Schwartz as your third person to go up to. So I went to Rabbi Schwartz and I asked him, you know, to be able to sit down with me or whatever it was. I cannot tell you how much of a fool you feel after going to Rabbi First. You think you know something? I mean, you know nothing. absolutely nothing to do with the Rabbi first. The first five things that I wrote, Rabbi Schwartz corrected every single one of them. Wrong about this, wrong about this, wrong about this, wrong about five things. Five things all in a row. There was no like respite of like, oh, you did this well. No, nothing. I got all five things wrong. I felt like an absolute fool. And I knew, I looked at it, I'm like, of course. Each time you think you know something, you're just thrown down. The shot behind wood is that you're supposed to grow. I still remember something that Rabbi Schwartz told me when I first came back to Chicago. I was at a wedding with him. We're both sitting down at a table, and I said to him, Rebbe here heard what they say about Ramosha Feinstein. Ramosha Feinstein never corrected anything he said. That everything he said when he was younger, he agreed with that psak when he got older. Rabbi Schwartz told me he has no idea how that could be true. The whole point of Torah is to grow. The whole point of Torah is to make a mistake, realize you made a mistake, and to make even further. If you were perfect at the age of 18, that's ridiculous. You didn't know anything at the age of 18. You had to have known more when you were 75 or 80. The whole purpose of Torah is to be able to grow and to be able to grow in learning. And maybe sometimes you should change your psak. Sometimes when you might have made a mistake when you were 18, you see the folly of your ways when you're a little bit older. So I hear the idea that he couldn't have made such a mistake, that Ramosha never made such a mistake, that I hear in such a way, but says for Schwartz, there's no way that he never corrected something that he did when he was younger and that he always went with it. It can't be. That's the concept of eights. When you have an Aron of eights, which is the second Luchos one with, it shows you're supposed to grow. You're supposed to make mistakes. You're supposed to do something. It's Lo Shemayim anymore. It's no longer in Shemayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to give you anything. You're going to have to work hard. You're going to have to make those mistakes, correct them, and do it again. That's the only way to be able to grow. That's the concept. That's why Moshe Rabbeinu, where were the first Luchos from? Where are those first Luchos? Who made them? Who brought them up? The HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe didn't do anything. God did everything for Moshe. Who wrote the Aseret HaDibros on top of the Luchos? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When Moshe Rabbeinu didn't understand the Torah, the Medrash says, what ended up happening? Moshe Rabbeinu said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I don't get it. I don't understand it. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it all inside his head. There's no effort by the first Luchos. By the first Luchos, the Torah that we barely can understand, you start off on a perfect level and that's that. It's nothing, it has nothing to do with you. But the second Luchos, Psolecha, make it for yourself. Moshe Rabbeinu is not a quarrier. If I would tell you, I would just get up to you, Reuven, go make two stones. Do you have any idea what you can do? I have no idea how to do that. I'm going to take sapphire, I'm going to take one chisel, like hit it, the whole thing is going to crack, and I'll be like, gosh, start again. How in the world did Moshe Rabbeinu know how to quarry stones? How would he know anything about this? What would he do? And he only, by the way, don't think, well, he has a bunch of days to do it. He only had one day to do it. He went up for 40 days, came back down on, but the day goes up. He goes up, was on. Shivasa Betamos, good. Shivasa Betamos. And then he came down for a full day, gave them all the punishment, fed them, drank them, whatever it is, had the Libyan kill them all. Then he went back up for another 40 days to daven for Bnei Yisrael, came back down on. Rosh Chodesh Elul, good. And Rosh Chodesh Elul came back down, and he gave Bnei Yisrael for one day. He told Bnei Yisrael, I'm going back up to get a second pair of Luchos. I have to make them first. He had about 6 hours, and then he went back up again to Rosh Chodesh Elul, and he came back down on Yom Kippur. Very good. Very good. He got that down. That's 120 days altogether. As it ends up working out. That makes sense. The idea is he only had one chance to do it. That's Psolecha. That, and he had to make an Aron Eitz. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu was like, oh, and by the way, make a wooden arm. That's the concept. You have to work for it. That's the idea. It's going to be a brand new type. Moshe wrote the Aseret HaDibros and all of the Torah Shebichtav up until the Parsha of Parshas Mishpatim. He wrote all of it on the Shnei Luchos Avam. Everything was written on top of that. That's the concept of what the second Luchos were like. It's very, very different. And that's why it had to be out of wood more than anything else. And that's the way to be Matzliach in Torah. Don't expect to learn Torah with a little drink in your hand, a little chilling on your plate, and leaning back. It's not how it's going to happen. The only way to learn Torah is by working hard and making sure that it happens. That's the only way to do it. It doesn't happen any other way. If you're not working hard, you're not going to get it, and then you're going to be upset because you're like, why didn't Torah come to me? It didn't come to you because you didn't try for it. There's still a line that the Nitzutz Hashem Torah, Shem Shem Astropolia was a big makobo. He wanted to figure out a certain line in Rashi, so he begged Rashi at his grave. He prostrated himself on Rashi's grave in Europe, and he begged for the words of Rashi to be given to him. And Rashi came to him in a dream and said to him, the words are begging in Shemayim not to be given to you because you haven't worked hard enough for it yet. This man was a Mekobel. What do you mean he hasn't worked hard enough for it yet? He was a Makobel prostrating on Rashi's grave. He didn't live in the city where Rashi was born or where he passed away. He was sitting there. He went over to the grave. What do you mean he wasn't trying for it? It's different. You need more. You need absolutely more. And the more Torah you learn, the more work you're going to have to do. It's just how it happens. It's not going to come just by injecting it into your veins. It just doesn't happen that way. The Chassam Sofer has a massive chiddush regarding the second pair of Luchos and what happened with them. But we have to ask a few questions. Number one, as we asked before, and we haven't really fully answered it, why did he switch the order of the Aron to the Luchos? Then he made the Aron before the Luchos. That's number one. Why would he do that? Number two, it says, after he made the Luchos, it says he brought them down, and it says, by Yusham, and they were there. Shkayach. What does that mean? Why does this pasuk have to tell me, and they were there? What is that kind of idea telling me? Number three, right afterward, it says, Bnei Yisrael, Nasu Viris, Bnei Yakan, Sham Meis Aron, Vayikavar Sham. That's where Aaron died and he was buried there. What in the world? Did you just skip 39 years in one pasuk? You got the Torah, everything was all good, you came back down, and then Aaron died? Aaron died 39 and a half years later after they got the Torah. It's not even close to one another. Where is that skipping of the pasuk? What does Aaron's death have anything to do with anything? Two introductions. Number one, Menachos, Sadi Testament Aleph, says, you have to be careful with the Talmud Chacham who loses his learning. Even if the Talmud Chacham has lost his learning and he's now completely gone, he's got nothing, you still have to be careful with him. Treat him with the utmost respect as if he still has his learning. As if he still has his learning. I learned this lesson very, very well. When I one time got Zohar to learn with Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel, one of the first times that I learned with him. And at the time, like, I knew he was a Rosh Yeshiva of the Mir. But I kind of thought that, you know, with the sickness and all, that, you know, he wasn't able to learn as well. You know, I just thought that his mind wasn't all there, and I just assumed that everything was, you know, that. So when I was learning with him, I didn't put myself in, like, learning mode. I put myself in, like, okay, I'm sitting with a gadol mode. You know, that's the basic idea. Like, at least I get to sit next to a gadol. And then he pulled out, he read one line of Gemara, right, and did a Rashi. And he said, grab me the Rashba. Grab the Rashba. Then he asked for a Shulchan Aruch. And he asked for something else, and something else, something else. I totally lost him. And then he said to me, after about 45 minutes of looking up different sperm, trying to figure out something, he said to me, what do you think Pshat is? I was like, oh my gosh, this is not the right time to ask me a question. I was spacing out for the last, like, 6 minutes, like, thinking to myself, like, I'm standing next to nothing. I was, like, making, like, a song. It was like a journey song. Like, I was just sitting there. I wasn't paying attention whatsoever. So I sat there, and I looked at him, and I gave him a complete bogus answer. Complete bogus answer. Maybe the Rashba means like this. So he looked at me, had his mouth open a little bit. I can picture the way he looked at me, like, mouth open a little bit. And he just, like, he pulls open another sefer and shows me a line. It was the exact opposite of what I had said. You know, literally the exact opposite. And he's like, is this what you meant? And I was just like, no. I sat there. He closes his arm. He's like, okay, we're done for right now. You feel like an absolute fool. Absolute fool. You got to be careful with everyone, especially a Talmud Chacham. And if a Talmud Chacham might have lost his learning, even then, you got to treat him with the utmost respect. How do we know that? The Shivrei Luchos, the broken Luchos, were put inside the Aron Kodesh. When the broken Luchos were put inside the Aron Kodesh, that teaches us that even a broken Talmud Chacham still is worth something. Now, even if it wasn't the same Aron that the regular Luchos were in, I want you to think, what did they do with that broken Luchos Aron? What did they do with it? Anybody know? The Aron didn't go in the Kodesh HaKadosh. The Aron with the regular Luchos went in the Kodesh HaKadosh. What did they do with the Aron with the broken Luchos? Where did that go? They went out to war. Very, very good. They used it to go out to war. Every battle that they used the Shivrei Luchos in the Aron Kodesh for, every battle that they fought with it, they won. If they brought out that Shivrei Luchos, they won every single battle. Only one time did they not win, because they brought out the wrong Aron. They brought the Aron Kodesh that had the regular Luchos in them, and they lost the war. When did that happen? It was captured by the Pelishtim during the days of... That's right, Eli Yakoin. Eli Yakoin, when Chofni and Pinchas, the two sons of Eli, brought out the Aron Kodesh, right? They brought out the Aron Kodesh, the real Aron Kodesh, that's when they lost. Now think about that. When they brought the Shivrei Luchos, they won. They brought the regular Luchos, they lost. That shows you that a Talmid Chacham who's lost his learning is still greater than a younger Talmid Chacham, even though the younger Talmid Chacham still has his learning. That tells you the power that somebody who has that type of a Talmid Chacham, how much power that person has. That makes it so kadosh. Number two, this is our second introduction. A Talmid Chacham who is buried in the wrong spots will not remain buried there. Something will happen. You know where we learned that from? Because you all learn Navi when you were in seminary. You learn Navi at some point, right? Right. So in Malachim, as we all know, Elisha has really got to do Navi. Go get a pink one and just get over yourselves, okay? Elisha went ahead and was buried inside a certain area. Somebody else who was a Rasha was also died and was thrown into the same kever. Because Elisha did not deserve to be buried next to that Rasha had tchiyas amesim. He got up, walked out of the grave, and there's machlokas if he died a little bit further off, or if he lived for a little bit, came home, and was just like, I don't know, it was crazy. I don't know which one it was. At the end of the day, that means that if a tzaddik is placed in the wrong place, then he's going to get up and go. Now, the luchos, as well as Sipri Torah, have the same status as a Talmud Chacham. Wherever a Talmud Chacham is buried, you can bury a Sipri Torah there as well. You cannot bury a Sipri Torah together with other svarim. I mean, if you have all these withered up Sidurim and Chumash, whatever it is, you can't put a Sefer Torah with them. You bury a Sefer Torah next to a Talmud Chacham. That's where you bury it. Now, if that's true, if the Sefer Torah is buried next to someone who's not a Talmud Chacham, somehow the Sefer Torah will not remain there. That's the concept. Now, we can answer it up. Don't worry, I'm not reading all of it. That's up. We'll talk about it later. Anyway, Hashem wanted an Aron Kodesh for the second Luchos that were going to come back down. He had not said a thing about the broken Luchos. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't hear a thing. He heard, I want you to make an Aron for the second Luchos. But what about the broken Luchos? I have the broken Luchos sitting in a pile right here on the ground at the bottom of Har Sinai. What do I do with that? So Moshe Rabbeinu made a Kal Vachomer. If he wants an Aron for the second pair of Luchos, the first pair of Luchos, that Luchos must be very special. So I need an Aron Kodesh for that. So we made an Aron Kodesh first. Even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him make the Luchos and then make the Aron, that was for the second Luchos. For the first Luchos, he has to make an Aron for them. So the first thing he did is he made an Aron Kodesh, not for the second Luchos. He made an Aron Kodesh for the first pair of Luchos, for the broken Luchos. And he made that Aron, he put the broken Luchos in. Then he made the second Luchos, and then he went up to Shemayim. When he came back down from Shemayim, he had no idea what to do with the second Luchos. Should he make a new Aron for the second Luchos? Or should he place the second Luchos together with the broken Luchos? Which one should I do? He remembered the halacha. He said, if it doesn't deserve to be with the broken Luchos, he'll bury it in the same Aron Kodesh as the broken Luchos. He'll see what happens. If it stays in there, that means it's supposed to be buried. They have the same amount of Kedusha. They can stay inside there. And if it jumps up, and the second Luchos jump up, and it don't stay inside there, then I'll know I have to make a second Aron. He put it inside by you shum, and they remained there. It stayed inside the Aron with the broken Luchos, and he realized that they both have an equal amount of Kedusha. Then, when the Mishkan was made, a second Aron was made with it. And that's the golden Aron with the wood on the inside and the gold on the inside with the Kruvim on top and the Kaporas. Then, on Rosh Chodesh Nisan, in the second year, that's when he took the real Luchos out of that original Aron and he placed them inside the Aron Kodesh and the Kodesh of Kedoshim in the Mishkan. And the broken Luchos remained in the second Aron. That second Aron went inside the Ohel Moed, which was a different Ohel, which was used for learning, that was like their Aron Kodesh that they had in a shul. He had a second Aron that he put inside there, and that's where Moshe Rabbeinu learned all day. He learned right next to the broken Luchos. That's the concept of what happened, and that's what ended up being. That is by Yusham. That's why he switched over the order. That explains everything that we just said. Okay, that explains everything we just went through. Okay, I'm going to go through one other thing. It's strange. I didn't go through why Aron died there, but we'll go through that later. Kedushas Levi. Rav Levi Zverdichev comes back for a little bit, okay? It's strange by the ego. Moshe Rabbeinu davened immediately, as soon as you heard, we all know what happened, right? You guys were really off before, so I'll explain. Day number 40, when he was up in Shemayim, Bnei Yisrael thought that was already over. They thought it was over, so they started, as we all know, they threw the gold and made the eagle is up, is there. Aaron's like, oh God, well, what are we going to do? Lots of bad things happened, okay? Moshe and Shemayim is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Saru maher min aderech. Your people have turned away very, very quickly from the road that they had gone on. They started worshiping idols. Okay? What did Moshe Rabbeinu do at that point? Come on, you guys know. We say it every time. Vayachal Moshe. The whole pasuk, everything we say, we lean on Atinus. Those psukim all deal with Moshe Rabbeinu when he was up on Har Sinai before he came down. After Moshe Rabbeinu, what does it say at the very end of the laning? Very good. Say it louder because that's what we do then. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to forgive us, right? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'll forgive you. Everything's all done. He came back down, threw the luchos down, got very, very upset, and then went back up to Shemaim and davened for another 40 days. I don't understand. Didn't he just get mechila from HaKadosh Baruch Hu? The Ramban's question. He just davened to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you're good, don't worry about it, go down. He goes down, breaks the luchos, then goes back up, and he's like, I need another 40 days with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You just davened in 3 minutes, and you did exactly what you wanted to do. You saved Bnei Yisrael. What else are you doing? What else do you need? So the Ramban answers very simply. It's a simple, simple answer. He says, you're right. The first time, when he went up there, he davened that Bnei Yisrael would not be killed immediately. And they weren't killed immediately. But there still was a gezerah, a gezar din against them that they were going to die a horrid death in the middle of the Midbar. To which Moshe Rabbeinu went up and he davened for them again for 40 days that they wouldn't die at all. And everything was going to be okay. And in the end, it was granted to him. Says Rav Levi Yitzchak, that's all the Ramban. Says Rav Levi Yitzchak, what does that mean? What does that mean? You have to understand how HaKadosh Baruch Hu works with Bnei Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not treat us like he does the other nations of the world. We are given much more chesed than the other nations of the world are given. Now think for a second. If you're in the king's palace, and you're a guy who works in the king's palace, and you mess up inside his throne room, what happens to you? Immediately. There's no question. You can't mess up in the king's palace. Let's say you're even on the outside of the palace, but you still work for the king, and you're clearly a worker for the king, but you mess up, beheaded. There's no question. Let's say you're outside the kingdom, and you're a little peasant who lives in a farmland, and you mess up by the king. The king hears about such a guy, and he looks at him, beheaded. Which ones are the quickest ones to be beheaded? The one inside the throne room. Then comes the one inside the palace. Then comes the ones all the way outside in the family. And it may take years for the king to even find out about him. I mean, he's so far away. He has nothing to do with the king. King hears about him. He's like, okay, I guess I have to kill him. But he means absolutely nothing to the king. There's nothing there. This is what it's like for Bnei Yisrael. Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he gave us the Torah, made us closer to him than any other nation in the world, which means we're in the palace. We may not be in the throne room, that's tzaddikim and tremendous Talmidei Chachamim, but we're definitely in the palace, which means if we mess up, HaKadosh Baruch Hu punishes us extremely quickly. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us something called Tisaris, or Chesed. And he brought down a certain amount of Chesed and gave kindness to Bnei Yisrael called Hashem, Hashem, Keo, Rachum, Mechanun, Erech HaPayim, Rav Chesed, V'yamas. It's a Chesed V'alapin, Nosiavon, V'fesha, V'chatzol, V'nakei. 13 meters that allows HaKadosh Baruch Hu that even though we sin and we should be killed immediately, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'll give him a chance. I'll leave it until Yom Kippur, and we'll make the decision on Yom Kippur. It's an unbelievable gift. Unbelievable gift. And they got that through Moshe Rabbeinu at the Igel Azov. The problem was, is that they lost it. It was given to them that once, and then it was gone. The Igel Azov should have wiped it out. That big schus that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had, from then on, we should have had Midas HaDin, and that's it. We do something wrong, we're punished. It may be a little bit afterward, but it's not going to be like it is, you know, we have a tremendous amount of time to make it up and to do tshuva, up until Yom Kippur to be able to do tshuva. There shouldn't be a Yom Kippur. Moshe Rabbeinu davened again to give them the concept of Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur started when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the second luchos. It never existed before that point. There was no such thing as Yom Kippur, so to speak. There would have been a Yom Kippur. There would have been a day. Does it say anywhere in the Torah that you're forgiven for all your sins in Yom Kippur? Say that anywhere? Say anywhere in the Torah that you're supposed to fast on Yom Kippur? Crazy, isn't it? It says, V'inisim et nafshoseichem. You should afflict your souls. Anybody know how to afflict your soul? Chazal darshan, it means fasting. I don't know. Maybe you're supposed to whip up in front of you. I have no idea. What are you supposed to do? But yet everybody knows Yom Kippur is all about fasting. Yom Kippur started as a fast day, and Yom Kippur started as a day of Mechila and Kapara and Slicha only when Moshe Rabbeinu came down after those 40 days. That's what a Kodesh Baruch Hu gave us. Moshe Rabbeinu knew, yeah, I saved Bnei Yisrael this time. How do I know that the next time they sin, it's not going to happen again? How do I know the next time they do something wrong, God isn't just going to wipe them out immediately because they're a bunch of fools? How do I know that's not going to happen? Said Moshe Rabbeinu, I got to go back up and I got to daven. And the next 40 days, that's what he did. And that's the connection to the next couple of psukim. Bnei Yisrael nasu v'yiras v'neyakin mosero. Sham neysan v'yikadar sham. Misham nasu agud godim. Migagode yatzvasa eretz nach le'mayim. All these places are places where Bnei Yisrael did a chet. Something went wrong. And Bnei Yisrael were given a little bit of erech apayim. They didn't all die immediately like they should have. All because of Moshe Rabbeinu's tefillah. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to them. You think that when I davened, it just worked for that moment and that was it? No, my friends. It worked for every single moment from then on. From that point forward, it always worked. Every single one was there. That's the concept of what happened. So in summary, we're going to go through what we went through today. The first thing that we have is, we have an introduction to the parsha that this is supposed to be for all the people in all generations, even in Golos. We mentioned what led up to the Igel Azov is Moshe Rabbeinu throwing the Luchos out of anger, but anger is okay if it's showing the people a lesson and it's got to be a broken kli. That's the idea behind it. Moshe Rabbeinu told the Bnei Yisrael what he did with the Aron Kodesh. It's not just Moser. It's telling us what would have been had the Luchos not been broken. Had the first Luchos not been broken, what we would have had. Then we have the Netziv that goes through stuff, but then we went through the Chassam Sofer, saying that it was totally different. There was an Aron Kodesh for the second Luchos and Aron Kodesh for the first Luchos as well. We ended with the Kedushas Levi saying why Moshe Rabbeinu went to Daven the first time and then for another 40 days to save Bnei Yisrael from the punishment that was going to be given to them. We'll stop with that. Have a good Shabbos.